If there is no God, can there be a purpose to life? Or is that just a narrow-minded Christian way of looking at things? No God, no purpose, no meaning? We'll talk about it today on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the line of fire.
All right. What if atheists are right? What if the worst conclusion of agnostics is right? There is no God. There is no personal God. There is no creator, no heavenly father who is actively involved in our lives. We are the products of chance, the products of random evolution. Is there a purpose in life? Can there be a purpose in life? Can there be meaning to life? Michael Brown, thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Or you can add your thoughts to those of our friends on Facebook at Ask Dr. Brown, Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. Okay, I got thinking about this afresh. I thought about it a lot, especially in the last couple of years as I've been reading more atheist literature and as I debated agnostic Professor Bart Ehrman earlier this year. But an article I read got me thinking about this some more, and I want to hear from you from two angles. If you would say of yourself you're an atheist or an agnostic or you don't believe that there is a God personally involved in our lives, you're welcome to call in and tell me, is there purpose in your life? Is there meaning? Is there a sense of direction, a sense of destiny that you live with? 866-34-TRUTH. Or if you used to be an atheist and came to faith in Jesus and now have a living relationship with God through Jesus, you came out of atheism or agnosticism, how has that affected your own life? Not just in terms of maybe you used to be bound by sin or doing drugs or out drinking or whatever the thing is and now you're changed, but how has it affected your life in terms of purpose, in terms of destiny, in terms of meaning? 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, you may have heard the exceptionally tragic report about twin sisters apparently made a suicide pact. Went to their Australian girls, came to the States. They were at a shooting range, was it in Colorado? And first, this horrific accident, two sisters shot in the head, one dead, one severely, gravely injured. And then it turns out it was a suicide pact. They planned to do it. And so any suicide's tragic, but this strikes you all the more pathetic. I mean, twins, apparently inseparable, and whatever issues they had relationally with parents, family, we're not getting into any of that. And as far as I'm concerned right now, that's speculation. But what we do know is that they had a number of books that they were traveling with. They had audio CDs they had with them. One of the books was The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins. Now, I want to make this very, very clear. We know that this is one of the most aggressive atheistic books written. Richard Dawkins has somewhat of an evangelistic zeal to reach people with the message of atheism, which he believes is liberating. I thank God that I am not in his shoes, for sure. But I am not saying that Dawkins' book caused these girls to kill themselves. Okay, first, we don't know anything about the details. Second, maybe the one sister that survived will have more to say about that. But at present, we don't know anything more about these details. That's number one. Number two, people are unstable on some level already for something to push them over to suicide. And number three, there are people that read the Bible and kill themselves. So I'm not blaming the Dawkins book. However, I can say this quite emphatically. If you were depressed, if you were suicidal, and you had any type of vestige of faith, any remnant of faith, any hope of faith in your own life, and you are now depressed and suicidal, read a book telling you there is no God, that could push you over the edge. Let me tell you this. If you were looking for a reason to live, people who are suicidally depressed obviously have given up hope, see no purpose in their lives, see only blackness and darkness from which there's no escape. Otherwise, hey, if you're in agony today and tomorrow's going to be better, you survive. If you're in agony today, or hopeless today, but deep down in your gut, you know that there's hope a month, a year from now, or you can see a purpose for your life, you don't take your life. Obviously, pain can be so unbearable that you lose control and just do something to end the pain. But normally, if we're not talking about some type of agony like that, all you have to do is have a little hope, okay, you're bankrupt, you lost everything, you went through a horrific divorce, your best friend just got killed in a car wreck, the position you've been working for years fell through, a major collapse happened in another area of life, you sinned and blew it and see no way out. If you can come past that and see some hope, something to live for, something to encourage you to hold on, some light at the end of the tunnel, and not the light of a train coming your way, as some hopeless people have said, then you don't kill yourself. But if you are hanging on by a thread, and then you read an atheistic book saying there is no God, there is no life after death, there is no redemptive purpose for what you're going through in the light of eternity, because we're just little specks coming and going, it's a piece of exalted dust of some kind, whatever it is, how are you going to have hope to hang on? Now, there was a case a few years ago where a father claims that what pushed his son, 22-year-old son, military vet, over the edge was that his son, who was known for sharing his faith and loved to debate issues, was in college and was confronted by a professor who allegedly told him he needed to read God Delusion, and subsequently the kid killed himself. Now, did God Delusion push him to do it? I don't know. If more details of that case are known, I don't know them personally, but this young man tragically can't come back and tell us the details. This much is sure. From my vantage point, if we are just the random products of a random evolution, that we don't actually have a soul, something that differentiates us from the animal kingdom, if we are just more highly refined animals and our goal here is basically to enjoy life, there is no God, there is no purpose and destiny, how can there be meaning? Now, Todd, you can differ with me. Feel free to differ with me, especially if you're listening and you're an atheist, you're an agnostic, and you say, no, my life is full, my life is overflowing, my life is rich. I differ. Feel free and differ. Share your perspective. I'll have some questions for you, but you get to share your perspective. And again, if you've come out of atheism, if when you came to faith in Jesus, you came out of atheism or out of agnosticism, I'd love to hear your perspective in terms of the meaning of life from one vantage point versus another. Let me read something to you. It's a famous little perspective given by Randy Alcorn. Will this affect your mindset? Would either of these worldviews affect your mindset? Here's the secular account. You are the descendant of a tiny cell of primordial protoplasm washed up on an empty beach 3.5 billion years. You are the blind and arbitrary product of time, chance, and natural forces. You are a mere grab bag of atomic particles, a conglomeration of genetic. You exist on a tiny planet in a minute solar system in an empty corner of a meaningless universe. You are a purely biological entity, different only in degree, but not in microbe, virus, or amoeba. You have no essence beyond your body, and at death you will cease to exist entirely. In short, you came from nothing and are going nowhere. Randy Alcorn contrasts that with the Christian worldview. You are the special creation of a good and all-powerful God. You are created in his image with capacities to think, feel, and worship that set you above all other life forms. You differ from the animals not simply in degree but in kind. Not only is your kind unique, but you are unique among your kind. Your Creator loves you so much and so intensely desires your companionship and affection that he has a perfect plan for your life. In addition, God gave the life of his only son that you might spend eternity with him. If you're willing to accept the gift of salvation, you can become a child of God. Dinesh D'Souza, in his book, What's So Great About Christianity, asks, now imagine two groups of people, let's call them the secular tribe and the religious tribe, who subscribe to these two worldviews. Which of the two tribes is more likely to survive, prosper, and multiply? The religious tribe is made up of people who have an animating sense of purpose. The secular tribe is made up of people who are not sure why they exist at all. The religious tribe is composed of individuals who view their every thought and action as consequential. The secular tribe is made up of matter that cannot explain why it is able to think at all. God willing, on Wednesday, I'll be leaving for India. In fact, I've got some special pre-recorded programming for Wednesday and Thursday that I think will really bless you, stir you, encourage you, challenge you. And then the plan is, if everything works, to come your way live from India Friday and Monday, which would be 1:30 in the morning India time, but we're going to go for it. That being said, if there's no God, I wouldn't be going to India on a missions trip. But with him, boy, life is rich, overflowing, purpose, meaning. We'll talk about all this, break it down for you, and we come back right here on the Line of Fire. Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH. If there is no God, can there be a purpose to life? If you are right now an atheist, an agnostic, and you say, I have purpose to life, I have a sense of meaning and purpose and even destiny in my life, and I don't believe in a God or need a God. In fact, I find the idea of no God to be very liberating. No God meaning N-O, God. Give me a call. I'd like to hear why you feel that way. Our listeners would like to hear as well. If you are a former atheist and now are a follower of Jesus or a former agnostic, I'd love to hear what happened in your life by way of transformation. If you go to our website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, click on the Line of Fire. We've also put up a link to the Randy Alcorn quote that I read in the first segment. The article there is called Two Sources of Self-Esteem. Now, before I read some very interesting comments on Facebook and break this issue down some more, I want to give you two apologetics principles of mine that are very foundational for everything I do, especially in Jewish apologetics now that I've interacted more with atheists and agnostics and with the homosexual community and with other groups. I try to follow these two principles. The first is super, super simple. If you're going to effectively answer someone's objections, answer someone's questions, you have to rightly understand their objection. That's the first thing. Often we pass each other like ships in the night. You object to blue and I answer red. You have an issue with A and I give you an answer from three. Which we're talking two different languages or missing each other. So how do you know that you are rightly understanding the person's objection? Really simple. What you do is you restate it to them in your own words. In other words, don't just repeat it, but say, okay, am I rightly understanding you to say this? And then you repeat the objection in your own words to their satisfaction. And they say, yeah, that's correct. Now, let me just put in a plug here for everyone in relationship, be it husbands, wives, be it folks on the way to marriage, be it parents and children. This works, this works very well in relationships too. How do I mean it? Sometimes we react to each other. You may get a little testy and upset with something. How about if you say to the person, okay, do I rightly understand that what's bothering you is this? Oh, you come back to them in that way. Many times that diffuses the thing right then because you understand each other. All right? Okay. The second apologetics principle is the more difficult one and the costlier one, which is this. In order to rightly answer the objection that the person has, you need to feel the weight of it. Now, often we have an answer that seems very trite to the person, very superficial, even if it's factually correct. So, give you my standard example. You get a call from a friend on the phone sobbing, all shaken up, they've just been in a terrible car wreck, the family's killed, they survived, believers, but they're absolutely devastated, shaking, screaming, crying. Well, is Romans 8:28 true? Is Romans 8:28 true that all things work together for good to those who love God, or in all things God works for the good of those who love God or call according to his purpose? Is that always true? Yes. Is that the time to tell the person, hey, Romans 8:28? No, of course not. That's the time to cry with that person and weep with that person and enter into their suffering. And get to where they are, if possible, as soon as you can, and put an arm around them and cry with them. And then just say, look, I don't understand this, but somehow God is still here. Somehow this horrific loss, somehow God's going to shine his light in your life again. So, you know, whatever the words of comfort, or you just cry with the person, and then at the right time, you can speak truth, faith-building truth, that even the worst tragedy can ultimately be turned for the glory of God, even if it's the work of the devil himself, or the work of wrong circumstances, or human error. Still, God can turn things. Okay, so what's my point? My point is that we don't just throw out a trite answer, that we seek to feel the weight of the objection. Now, let me tell you why this is a very costly and difficult process. It means you have to make an effort to get into the other person's shoes. It means that you have to actually challenge the security of your snug little system by seeing things through their eyes. Now, if you're not strong and established in the Lord, or if you're struggling with a particular faith system, maybe you came out of Mormonism and came into a real wonderful, vibrant, born-again experience with Jesus, but you've got very weak foundations and a lot of family pressure, well, you may not want to be getting into heavy apologetics until you're just grounded, strong. In the same way, someone, say, coming out of alcoholism has a lot of friends in the bar, but he doesn't go in the bar to reach them. He's going to reach them in another setting, right? But if you're strong and secure in your own views, you know, for example, there's no possibility in your mind that Islam could be true. Okay, what you want to do serious interaction with Muslims and serious Islamic apologetics, what you want to do now is get in the shoes of those people as much as possible. Try to see how they view Muhammad. Try to see how they relate to Allah. Try to see how they look at the scriptures. So at least you can see it through their eyes, and then your answer has much more substance. The problem in doing it, again, is it often threatens our snug little system. It gets us in a more personal, touching relationship with people, and it's often very painful. You know, it's easy for people to thunder against the sin of homosexuality. It's another thing to sit and listen to people who are professing Christians and struggling with same-sex attraction. To talk to people who lived their whole lives thinking God hated them or had condemned them forever. Or to talk to people that are just torn up because on the one hand they're married, on the other hand they've got these attractions to the same sex and they feel like hypocrites, and what do they do? And you say, well, it's wrong. Okay, I'm not minimizing the sin of homosexual practice. I'm saying that because God called me to get involved in this area specifically, he spoke to me to reach out, resist, reach out to the people with compassion, resist the agenda with courage, talking about homosexual issues, that because of that, I've done my best to read books written by gay activists or by people that profess to be religious Jews and are homosexual or practicing Christians and are homosexual. I'm talking about and practicing their homosexuality at the same time. Read things, feel the weight, feel the pain, have a broken heart, pray with tears, and then have an answer that comes with much more depth. And of course, as a Jew interacting with rabbis hundreds and hundreds, thousands of hours over the years, and reading so much of the literature, I can see how they look at me or how they look at the Christian community or church through history. It's painful, but enables me to answer on a deeper level. So when it comes to atheism, I don't come out of atheism, but my wife Nancy does. When we met, we're both 19 years old. I've been a believer for a little over 2 years. She was a hardcore atheist. She had become an atheist when she was a little girl, maybe 8 years old. Her mom was divorced several times. The stepfather that was raising them, going to synagogue, Reform synagogue, which is ultra-liberal and does not believe in the literality of the God of the Bible, in short. And she concluded, as a little girl, there is no God. She saw no evidence of God in her family's life, no evidence of God in the synagogue. And as a little girl, I thought, boy, what a shame. If there really was a God, it'd be wonderful. But there isn't. When I met her, she was a hardcore atheist, hostile to religion. God miraculously, wonderfully saved her. I've done my best to get into the mind and the heart of the atheist and to lay in bed meditating. Okay, I've just evolved. There is no God. There's no afterlife. And what it boils down to for me is, then there's no purpose to life. Am I right? I'll explain why I believe I am when we come back.
We're
We're talking today about atheism and the meaning of life, the purpose of life. Can there be purpose and meaning if there is no God? Michael Brown, thanks for joining us. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. If you're not on our Facebook page, it's a great place to be. Ask Dr. Brown. That's Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. As soon as new articles come out in our Voice of Revolution magazine, as soon as we have new audio clips, messages released, videos released, you're the first folks to know there. And we interact about the show just about every day. All right. So one night I was laying in bed. I've done this a number of times, but one night in particular, I felt like I just about got in the shoes of an atheist, so that I crossed over that line as if there was no God and it felt real to me. No, I was not concerned that I couldn't come back. I crossed over and couldn't come back. Richard Wurmbrand, sainted suffering believer now with Jesus, in one of his books mentioned that when he was in solitary confinement, he would take little pieces of stale bread that he would get and then save it under his bed or keep it under his mattress and then just kind of shave the things into, you know, work with them until he made them into like little chess pieces, and he would play chess against himself. 3 years in solitary confinement, if you can imagine that. And he was so able to isolate his mind. He's a brilliant guy. He was so able to isolate his mind that he would play against himself and make a move and then be staggered by the move. It's like, whoa, how do you respond to that? At times, I have written down Jewish objections to Jesus or other objections to the faith that I really felt I grasped, got it, wrote it down. And then when it came time to answer it, it's like, ooh, that's got some substance to it. Thankfully, of course, they're wonderfully good, solid answers. But this particular night, I was laying in bed. I was meditating. Okay, there is no God. How would the world look? There is no God. There is no God. And suddenly, what hit me was not that you couldn't enjoy a good meal. Of course, you can be an atheist and enjoy a good meal. It's not that you couldn't enjoy a good relationship if you're an atheist. It's not that you couldn't work hard on a job. It's not that you couldn't enjoy the beauty of nature or fun sports or just whatever the thing, whatever your hobbies are, whatever, you know, reading a good book, whatever it is, some physical pleasure. Now, you could enjoy all that. But what struck me was that if there's no God, if we just came into existence and we're just a higher level, but of the same kind of a worm or an ant or a cat or a dog for that matter, there is actually no sense of purpose and destiny. And I realize that every day of my life, I live with a sense of destiny and purpose every day of my life. I talked about this on a show some months ago and asked you if you feel a sense of destiny and purpose in your life. And boy, many of you called in with rich and wonderful answers and posted on Facebook with rich and wonderful answers. Yes, sense of purpose, sense of destiny. Now look, an atheist may say, well, this is our race and I want to help people. Again, the question is why? I mean, if you're gone, you're gone. That's the end of it. Well, people will miss me. Well, then they can just end their life. What does actually matter? What's the value of a human life if it's not in the image of God? You might say, well, man, you're projecting from your own viewpoint. Well, tell me why I'm wrong. When Nancy and I have talked about this, she said that in her view, atheism works if you're healthy and things are going well. No, it's not to say that every atheist on their deathbed has a conversion experience. I've been with some people that were atheistic till their last moments, as far as I could tell. Christopher Hitchens, in the midst of his apparently terminal illness, seems to be as strongly atheistic as ever and is even hedging his bets by saying, if you ever hear, you know, later stages of cancer or treatment that I believe in God, it's wrong, it's not true, it's just something's the matter with my mind. Of course, he could have an encounter with God that changes all that, and we're praying that he will. But the fact is, if you're old or you're old and weak or your health breaks down terribly, what's the purpose of life then? You're an atheist? Think of it. There's no world to come. There is no world to come. Atheists always harp on the hell and how can there be a hell. Okay, let's turn it around and say the Bible's very clear that if you don't believe in Jesus, you forfeit eternal life. Let's focus on eternal life. Being with him forever. Joy, celebration, purpose, vitality, forever and ever. Just, here, think of a little baby in a crib that's a week old, what is that baby actually doing? How is that baby contributing to human society? How is that baby aiding and abetting the business world or the health discoveries? Or what, it's just being a baby. How is that baby writing new poetry? Or it's doing, it's just a baby. It's existing. And, of course, the parents are thrilled and their lives revolve around that little one. But the point I'm making is that that baby doesn't just have value because it's a little baby, but because it's going to grow up into an adult. And this little baby that's just laying in a crib can't do anything, can't move. If it soils itself and there's no one there to help, it can't do anything. It's a week old. It can't roll. It can't change its diaper. It can't do anything. It can't feed itself. It can't fend for itself. All it can do is flail and cry. Yet that human being created in the image of God is going to grow up and can potentially save other lives, can potentially discover a cure for cancer, can potentially take a message of life to a tribe in the darkest jungles of Africa and bring them the message of the love and goodness of God, could potentially bring joy and healing to many. But just think that our entire lives, I'm 55 now, by God's grace, just getting going, full of vigor to do the will of God. But hey, I'm not expecting to be preaching the gospel with vigor at the age of 100. Welcome back to the Line of Fire. It could happen, but I'm not expecting it. And yet, let's say I go with full vigor and strength to 100. Let's just say that could happen. Full vigor and strength to 100 years old. Do you realize what that means, though? That my life in the light of eternity after 100 years is far, far, far less developed in terms of eternal purpose, destiny, than a little baby in a crib that's a week old. And in other words, 100 years compared to eternity, continuing to grow in God. Hey, look, we use, 10% of our mental capacity now, our brain capacity. Maybe in the world to come, we get to use 100%. That's my hunch that Adam had it before the fall. Who knows what we'll get to develop into in God, doing his will, serving him, loving him. In a world, not floating in clouds with what look like little diapers and harps in our hands, mindlessly. No. Living in a new earth in the presence of God and developing and growing into everything that God has for us. No sickness, no pain, no death, no disease, no devil. Forever and ever and ever and ever. That's what we can look forward to. Incredible hope and purpose in this world because we know God. And also, no matter what comes our way, no matter how horrific, no matter how painful, whether it's cancer, whether it's death, whether it's disaster in the family, if we walk with God, God can bring light out of darkness, can bring good out of evil, can bring hope and meaning out of tragedy. We have all that. But if we're just blade of grass, ant, human, we're all just products of evolution, going nowhere, coming from nowhere, how can there be purpose and meaning? How can there be purpose and meaning? To me, it is all. Rob, we come back. I want to read some interesting posts on our Facebook account and more. Stay with us. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Line of Fire. You know, I thought I was leaving for India today. Somehow I thought today was December 1st. And then I realized, no, tomorrow is December 1st. And then I realized, no, it's Wednesday. It's December 1st. So I had my calendar slightly off. I thought we were celebrating my wife's birthday yesterday. And it's actually tomorrow. But we got it all straightened out. We're all clear. Yes, special birthday present long since purchased. Everything's in good order. But we are talking about a real serious issue today. Atheism, if atheism is true, if there is no God, can there be purpose and meaning to life? 866-34-TRUTH. Before I go to the phones, Wednesday I leave for India, God willing. I get in there sometime Friday. It's my 17th trip to India. And there's a lot of poverty and suffering, a lot of money coming into India, India economy growing in many ways, India even lending money to America in certain ways. But there are hundreds of thousands of villages in India in abject poverty. Abject poverty. I'm talking about people that live from day to day on a handful of rice, that suffer terribly, that when the rainy season comes, they can die just of malnutrition because of diarrhea and all the nutrients leaving their body. People who live and die with nothing. Now, of course, the Hindu system says, well, they'll reincarnate. They take their suffering well. They reincarnate in a little better state and keep progressing up the ladder. In point of fact, if atheism is true, that's it. Tell me the meaning of that person's life. All they did in their 23 years on this earth was beg on the street. They're crippled and they're deformed, so the parents use them to try to get beggar's money, and all the only goal every day is to get food in their mouth, and that's it. And then they die of sickness, or someone beats them to death. There's no God? That's it. Where's the purpose? Where's the meaning? People just get crumbs in this world, and then it's over? You know, I wonder if the atheist puts the very same value on that life as on the life of a healthy, prosperous, educated person, perhaps in Europe or America. And I wonder how much of that atheist life they're willing to invest and do without themselves so that others can have. Something to think about. All right, let me go to the phones. Philip in Charlotte, thanks for calling the Line of Fire today.
Yes, Michael.
Hey.
I wanted to share for your subject today an incident in my pre-conversion days when I was an atheist and was involved with a group of philosophers which were involved in some of the leading thinking of the time. But among the group, all of us were unbelievers, but we just took it for granted. If you understood the scientific worldview, number one, you would be an unbeliever, and number two, you would be very depressed, because to understand the scientific worldview was to understand our naturalistic point of view was to understand a depressing worldview. And at that time, a lot of the leading philosophers at that time were existentialists, and many of the existentialists said the only legitimate question was the subject of suicide. Some of the listeners may recall Ira Camus, who actually did in his life, and because the reason is they properly understood the naturalistic and the scientific worldview, and there is no meaning. And so these girls probably were very bright, and accepting that I also want to say this. Sometime during this time, I had this encounter which resulted in my conversion, and that monkey that used to be on my back, which was when you were awake, you wanted to sleep. When you were asleep, you were afraid to awake. But that the most severe depression that I used to experience in those days, it ended instantly. Over the last 30 years since that time, or 40 years, I've had depressing days, but nothing like the type of depression that would lead to the tragic thing of these young girls.
Yeah. Philip, that's articulate and well said, especially the fact that the people who were smart enough to draw the right conclusions ended up taking their lives, because what's the purpose? And then if you're a sensitive soul and you see so much suffering and pain in the world and there's no hope, what do you tell that person starving to death in India? What word of encouragement do you give them? Why even go on existing in pain? So to take their lives... It's a logical conclusion. Thank God for hope in Jesus. Thank God for new life in Jesus. Thank God for a reason to live and the ability to look death in the face and smile. We'll be back. Thank you for the call, Philip. I appreciate it. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Line of Fire. We've been talking about atheism, and the purpose of life. If there is no God, can there be purpose, destiny, meaning? I want to make this clear. Someone can be poor, have nothing in this world, and have a sense of purpose, have a sense of meaning. In particular, if they know God, their sense of meaning and purpose transcends their physical surroundings. But I'm wondering if an atheist came with me to India and went into one of the tribal regions that we've been to, and people living the way they've lived for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, no running water, no electricity in their villages, and living very, very difficult lives. What can you tell that person on a personal level that would enrich their life? That all their only goal from when they get up in the morning to when they go to sleep at night is to get enough food to survive. And that's it. I remember one of our trips where Nancy asked our translator, why do the people in this village seem so sad and oppressed? And they said, they're so poor, they can only eat one meal a day. What's the word that the atheist brings to those people? I'll tell you, the word that we bring to those people is one that in the midst of poverty, in the midst of sickness, in the midst of having nothing in this world, can infuse their lives with meaning, with hope, with purpose, that they know God, that they're created in His image, that beyond this world, there is a world to come of unimaginable spiritual and emotional wealth and wholeness and blessing, and that they can share this message, that they can bring joy into people's lives in a tangible way, that bring health, healing, hope to others, that even in their own weakness, they can pray, and God can answer their prayers. You think of it, it's mind-boggling. You take all that away, basically, we're educated animals. Eric, on our Facebook page, said, I've talked with atheists and agnostics about this before. They indeed do share that their purpose and meaning that there's purpose and meaning on a personal level, but on a macro level, all things continue as they have. The personal level, they share how it's a somewhat selfish notion for some, fame, wealth, power, but for others, they see their purpose in their posterity. They desire to make an impact in their friends, family, communities that will carry on even after they're gone. This includes being charitable and giving, participating in arts, conservation of nature, concern for health, well-being of others, etc. Why? Why? So we educated animals can keep reproducing and hoping to avoid real terrible tragedy, and if it comes, then what? You know, it's a very, very sad picture. And even though there are atheists who say their lives are full or overflowing, when the bottom falls out and reality sets in, or they look back at the end of their lives, boy, there's a massive, massive question mark, one that has been answered decisively for us as followers of Jesus. Let me then, friends, give you my bottom line. Knowing God, having faith in God, recognizing who He is, understanding we're not just here by cosmic accident, nor are we part of some chess game being played by aliens. No, we're created by God in a loving, careful way with a specific purpose and destiny. That's liberating. Christopher Hitchens says, get free, throw out religion, throw out God. No, it's liberating. Because now it's not just me floating through this universe and it's all about me. No, when I come to know Him, I come to find the very purpose, destiny of life. Everything I do, down to the smallest detail, can now be infused with meaning, and it is liberating, life-giving. If you don't know God, cry out to Him and say, God, if you're really there, I want to know, and I will follow you. Friends, let me encourage you to get a resource. We'll make it available free if you can't afford it. It is my DVD debate with Dr. Bart Ehrman. 2 hours, does the Bible provide an adequate answer to the problem of suffering? Write to us at Line of Fire at P.O. Box 5546. That's P.O. Box 5546, Concord, North Carolina, 28027. P.O. Box 5546, Concord, North Carolina, 28027. Write to us, enclose a gift of any amount, and request the DVD. If you can't afford it, simply request it. We'll send it out. And look to the Lord. Turn to the Lord and say, God, I give you my life without reserve, without condition. Use me to the full for your purposes. You'll be amazed to see what He'll do. Back with you tomorrow, right here on the Line of Fire.